Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer. How you doing, Doug?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It was a good day.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. How's your week been so far?
I've just been really busy. I have a lot going on in the studio, both mixing and mastering, which is great.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's actually the first time in a while that I've run behind schedule. Oh. So I've got enough going on right now where I'm pressed for time and trying to get things done. It's not stressful. It's always fun.
No, it's a nice problem to have for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's a little foreign to me in my little independent studio, but it's nice to come into the end of the year strong like this. I feel it's a good sign for coming into 2020 with some momentum.
Very cool.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Oh, it's been a busy week in a different way. We've had some end of year vocal concerts for the high school. My son's in the vocal jazz. So we were up in Sacramento over the weekend for a concert, and we had one last night here locally. And personally, I finished a mix for a contest and turned that in. It was the one I was referring to previously when I said I was going to do a test mix with just the Shep's omni-channel strip, just to see how it turned out.
Yeah. Was that the Lewitt mix contest?
Yeah, it was the Lewitt mix contest. But the mix turned out really good. I'm kind of like, well, why do I even have all these other plugins if this one sounds so good?
Yeah, I wanted to do that and put an entry in that contest, but I did not have time.
I'm too busy. I think it's open until the 31st of December.
Oh, is it? I will have time over the holiday break.
Yeah, I wanted to just kind of like wrap that up and move on to other things. Oh, nice. I've had it kind of hanging out there on my to-do list. So I kind of combined the contest with a little experiment of my own and just kind of got that out the door this morning.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I might try to do that, and maybe I'll do it with that mix console that I have that I've never used and whose name I can't even remember right now.
Oh, the expensive one?
Yeah.
Which the plugin which will not be named.
Yeah. It's very pretty.
I'm sure it is. I have to say, and this is a bad thing, that I'm a sucker for a really good graphic interface on a plugin. If it looks like a vintage piece of hardware that if it were real, you could just kind of like feel the knobs and see the scratches off the paint. I really like that.
There's a YouTube channel that I watch. The guy, he cannot stand that type of thing. He thinks it's a waste. He doesn't know why plugin developers even design UIs.
I believe it. Is he the guy with the long hair with the accent? What's his name?
Yeah, yeah.
The White Something Studio.
Yep, that's it. Yep, exactly.
He's funny. He's very opinionated, but he's spot on sometimes for sure.
I know we don't want to get all into plugins and everything, but it's kind of exciting because I just bought Pasek EQ.
Oh yeah, I saw your a picture of that.
I'm getting ready to use it in my first gig, and looking forward to. I don't know if it'll actually make it into the final or not, but I'm going to use it and see how it goes. I'm familiar with the controls enough. I just want to make sure that I am happy with my performance using it. And if I'm not, then I'll just use what I normally do in my chain.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to using it in tandem and seeing how it turns out. Worst case, I'll learn something.
So. Right. Lately, I feel like if I don't challenge myself to literally say, okay, find a place in this mix for this plugin, or else just get rid of it or disable it or something. Like if I don't have a compelling reason, like challenge myself to use it, then I'm probably just going to go with my usual like top 10 or whatever.
Sure. I think throwing yourself into that type of thing and just exposing yourself and, to the new stuff and doing it, just don't have any, set aside any fears or, anything like that, that might get in your way and just jump into it,
Yeah. Not that we wanted to continue last week's, talk about plugins again, but.
No, really. Where I wanted to go is I wanted to ask you about some of your experiences in your recording, because I know that you work with some other guys remotely and have done, I know at least how many EPs do you have?
several. I'd have to count at least three EPs.
Yeah, I've got three in my mind right now.
A couple full lengths.
Yeah. And I know that you've worked with at least two other musicians on those remotely.
Yeah, I've actually worked with a handful of musicians, a lot of whom I met through the DIY music chat.
Okay.
I never started that chat, or actually I didn't start it. I took over it and renamed it. But I never had any expectations of it beyond just having a good discussion about things. And surprisingly, it kind of evolved and turned into a group of collaborating independent musicians, which is great. And I've worked with some of them. I've mixed songs for some people. Some people have guests done vocals or drums. Two of the other folks there and I did a whole full-length album over the course of 5 years. I've collaborated back and forth with a couple of, I've over the last few years, I've done a bunch of remote collaborations. It's been very interesting.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to one thing that you said earlier there, and that was that you renamed DIY Music Chat. So someone else was running that chat show?
Yeah. I used to be an active participant in a chat called, it was the GG Girls Chat by Madeline Sklar, who now does the Twitter Smarter Chat. And I was a weekly participant and I learned how to do a Twitter chat from her and met a bunch of other people online. But the DIY Music Chat used to be called the Home Recording Chat, HRC Chat or something like that. And it was run by somebody who's kind of not even doing music anymore. He put out a really cool blues EP and then kind of called it a day after that for reasons I still don't know. But yeah, he didn't want to do it anymore. And I asked if I could take it over. And then I did. And then I kind of thought the name wasn't really intuitive. So I renamed it. And I've been doing it for like 3.5 years now.
Well, that's really cool. I had no idea. What was it about maybe, I don't know. I'm going to have to look. But I think probably 7 months ago or so, I messaged you and I said, I really like what you're doing. I want to do a show.
I remember that. Yeah. I thought that was cool.
And because I was inspired by what you were doing there. I think it's great and the community that's built around it. And you've really been generous in sharing. And I appreciate that, because a lot of the people that do the DIY music chat also do the audio mix chat.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch the crossover. I like that yours has a little more technical, a little different leaning, a little different theme to it. And I used to be more technical, but that kind of, I feel like that alienated some people. So I kind of have been broadening it a little bit based on who's showing up regularly.
Yeah, I agree. And I have lost some participants because I think a lot of times the content and the other people that are interacting, the discussion is at a level that's not beginner. And
true.
And there's some people that are at beginner level and it's difficult for them, I think, to feel comfortable participating in a discussion that's outside of their current level of understanding. So
yeah, it's a funny thing. I mean, I want to talk about mixing a lot of times, but a lot of the people that join regularly, they either don't mix themselves or they're at a beginner level of mixing and they don't have any input. They just want to learn. So they just kind of sit and listen instead of participate in the discussion. And I never come at it as if I'm an expert on anything because I don't feel that I am. I always come at it as I want to have a discussion to find out what other people are doing. And I know that's how you run the audio mix chat as well. Just kind of like, what's everybody else doing? Can we learn from each other kind of thing?
Yeah. And I don't intend for it to alienate beginners by any means. And actually, if we had beginners come in and I think one of the things is people, they don't ask questions because maybe they're a little intimidated.
I think that's like almost 100% of it. Nobody wants to look stupid online or in writing. If we were, sitting around an actual table, I think people would be more likely to speak up, but.
Yeah. I was an adjunct professor.
Oh, right. I forgot you mentioned that.
And I absolutely love to teach. And I want those people to ask, I want them to ask questions and feel comfortable asking questions because if there's something that I know, I want to share it. or if I can facilitate finding that information from someone else or from some other resource and provide it to them, I want to do that for them.
Right.
You know, so maybe there's some things I need to learn in how to keep the attention and help those individuals feel comfortable. So I hope if anyone listening would like to come to the Audio Mix Chat on Sundays that is a beginner, I would hope that you would feel completely comfortable telling me that, you know, in the group that, hey, I'm not sure exactly what I need to know here. But I'd like to do whatever, you know, this is.
Right.
And then open that up because everybody that's in this group and everybody that's in DIY Music Chat wants to help everybody else.
I think so too. But I also think that what happens is people who feel like they don't have anything to contribute in the moment feel comfortable reading the text of the chat after the fact and learning from it that way.
Sure.
And you know, I want to be respectful of everybody learning the way that they want to learn, and maybe not speaking up is okay. But when I moderate the chat, I try to include everybody who joins in a sense that, okay, I'll speak to this in a high level, and I'll take it back and say, okay, for anybody who's beginning, let's generalize this a little bit. I try to be inclusive of everybody, and that's the reason that I do, you know, very heavily moderated. I focus on it 100% for that 1 hour, and then I let it go.
Yeah.
Because I really do drive it. And sometimes I change the subject if people who show up kind of want to talk about something else that day than what I thought people wanted to talk about.
So I want to get back to your experience in working remote with other musicians.
Yeah, we got off topic just a little bit there.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, I mean, I like the flow and being liquid. It's fine.
No, totally.
But tonight I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say about how you collaborate with other people and how you've actually come to the point where you've produced this catalog that you have. Mm-hmm. And for those listening, Mojo's Army on Bandcamp, okay? There's some... You guys have done great. Your stuff sounds awesome. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a fan for sure.
Oh, so, I appreciate that.
And I really, knowing that, you know, you're working with other musicians and doing all this production together, not in real time.
Right.
I want to ask you to share with others your approach to how you guys achieved that.
Yeah, that's tricky. So Mojo's Army, it's funny. One of the reasons I called it that was that 10 years ago, I envisioned that in the future, I would have an army of collaborators, and I didn't for a very long time. It was just me until one song that Troy Adams and I did. He did the guitars. It was a song called Convergence, and I think this was on the Red Days EP. It's weird that I can't remember which album it was on. Anyway... So we did that, and basically he did a guitar bed, basically, and then I did the rest of the production, including what I now know is called top lining, which is when you write lyrics and sing over an existing piece of music. So that was the first real one that came to anything. So there's been a few like that on that last EP I did where I did four different versions of the same song. So I had the lyrics, and I thought, what am I going to do with this? And I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I don't have to pick one. Maybe I can do multiple. So I decided to do a collaboration for each song. So again, Troy did the guitar bed, the acoustic bed for the acoustic version. And I changed the lyrics a little bit to go over the top of that and arranged it with some strings. And my son, who approached me at one point and said, hey, I like what you're doing. I'd like to be a part of your creative process. And I said, well, what do you do? And he goes, I kind of make beats. And I said, all right, come up with a beat and we'll figure something out. And so then he came up with this really cool beat on his phone in GarageBand. And I did the beat version by adding some synth bass, and it kind of came out all Nine Inch Nails-y. Anyway, so that one, and then I had Stevie from, and then there was one, did background vocals, and then I'm like, this is too good to be just background vocals, and I turned it into a duet for the funky version. So that was one way. So in terms of the process, there's two ways we've kind of gone about it. One is that somebody like Troy will come up with a bed of a song, and then we'll work around that in terms of that's how the whole The Answer Is None album came out. He would do an arrangement of guitars, and then I would write lyrics to it based on his working title, and then top-lined it, and then Jay Hale, who's a great guitarist and guitar builder, lives in LA, he would do the bass line and the leads, and then I'd finish the arrangement and the mixing. And we did an entire album that way. It took 5 years. It would have been four, but the last year was a whole series of setbacks. I want to say, in any collaboration, in my experience so far, the most important is that you're all on the same page in terms of what your goal is, and in terms of, you know, back to what success looks like to you, everybody kind of has to have an idea of what you're going for. But the most important thing I've found is that there needs to be essentially a project manager. There needs to be a leader who holds the files and reaches out and say, hey, how's it going with that bass track? Or, hey, how's the guitarist coming? And assembles it and is the keeper of the keys, basically, and has it all in their own Google Drive or Dropbox, or just kind of keeps track. I have a Google spreadsheet, for instance, of all of those songs with everybody's part and how it's finished. And that wasn't really discussed at the outset necessarily, but it's one of those things where somebody has to take the lead and say, all right, I'm going to just kind of keep the files, check in with everybody, make sure everything's going according to the loose plan that we have. I'm working on a song with somebody else who's doing that, and we're going to have an album out probably next year early with a whole bunch of collaborations on it. And I did a top line. It's going to be a song called Dirty Love City on an album. That's going to be a lot of fun. But somebody else is project managing that, and I'm just contributing. So it's the other side of it for me, which is also fun. Happy to do it either way.
So are people sharing WAV files that are time coded, so you can assemble those?
Yeah, basically WAV files, or occasionally, and I don't prefer this, but occasionally MP3s, which then I re-encode to WAV files. But they're all, you have to agree initially, just like in a mixing project, you agree initially on the key and the tempo. And, you know, some of us are working in different DAWs. You know, a lot of people have Pro Tools or Cubase or Reaper. I have Logic. But as long as it's a WAV file and the correct encoding or similar encoding, and you all know, hey, at 2 minutes and 57 seconds, drop in with your guitar solo and that kind of thing.
Do you initially create some type of scratch track to share around so everyone has?
Yeah, that seems to be also the key, is that somebody starts with a basic arrangement, usually of a guitar track, or I call it a bed because you kind of, everything lays on it. And it's basically like the starting point, you know, the key that everything revolves around.
So when you have all of your WAV files and you're ready to mix, is the mixing process, is that also collaborative? Are you mixing and sharing MP3s of, you know, maybe instrumental mixes and things like that as you build that out?
That's a good question. So far, and I have been doing this for a while with a bunch of different people, but I can't say that this is how everybody does it or this is the best way. But the person who's the project manager is usually the person who ends up being the mixer as well.
Sure.
And what seems to happen is, okay, they get a rough mix after they've done any rearranging or whatever. And then everybody gets to kind of listen to the rough mix and have input on it, kind of like co-producers. And then they'll go back and go, okay. And of course, it seems like everybody who's playing bass will go, oh yeah, you know, the bass needs to be louder. And if you're playing guitar, you know what, the guitar needs to be louder. I think that's typical, whether you're in a band in a room or in a band across the United States on the internet. Everybody wants to hear themselves. So, you know, you try to be respectful of all of the input that you get. For me, it's mostly, you know, if I'm doing the mixing, I want to make sure that the arrangement is good. I want to make sure that it's, you know, I've been known to take a guitar part and chop it and like pull a piece out and put it somewhere else so that it's a lead into something else. And that wasn't part of the original plan, but it just sounded better that way, you know?
Right. So you assemble a mix and the project manager is probably responsible for that. And then do you outsource mastering, or do you have someone else other than the person who mixed it do the mastering in that group? Or how do you guys approach polishing up the...
Yeah, that can be collaborative. So far, for the mixes that I've done the mastering as well. And I think that the song that I just toplined, that album is going to be mixed and mastered by the same person. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that people mix and master the same thing. I think it's always good to have a separate set of ears to do those two separate processes so that you have, you know, a little separation between, okay, this is what I think it should sound like. And then somebody else can go, okay, this is what I think that it should be polished to really sound like. But I don't know how much it really matters right now.
Yeah. So once you get past that point and you've got a master, you're ready for a release, then as the group of remote collaborators, how do you approach distribution? Does the project manager also manage the distribution of the song to different platforms? And I know that then there's also going to be, you know, royalties and things like that involved. I know DistroKid does a really good job with this. Is some type of distribution service like that what you generally use?
Yeah. Yeah, so far, and apart from the one-off stuff, so that's kind of how I've been doing it. I have a DistroKid account, and for the collaborations that I've been in charge of, I typically release it out of DistroKid. I'm an ASCAP member, so I always ask everybody who contributed to the creation of the song, you know, what's your PRO affiliation, so I can get you registered properly. The Answer Is None project that Troy J. and I did, that we put out on CD Baby, so that was a little different. Now, I will say, and this is, you know, I trust all the people that I've collaborated with implicitly. We're all good friends, but this is one of those areas where, you know, when independent musicians kind of take over the role that used to be handled by major labels and A&R people who would come in and go, okay, before we get going, you all need to sign these contracts. You all need to sign these split sheets. You all need to, you know, they had their teams of lawyers and their processes in place. None of us have signed any split sheets or sat down and kind of hashed out the legal details of any of this stuff. Not that any of us think that any of this is really going to be, you know, Grammy nominated and blow up, but it's something that I think about in terms of process improvement.
Have you ever published out to any media like vinyl or you know, or CDs, or
do
you...
Not yet. We're gonna probably do the Answer Is None album to CD, but I have to raise a little capital for that. It's at least $300 to $500 for an initial pressing of a CD. And I go back and forth as to whether that's, you know, I go to shows all the time, and I always buy CDs from the bands themselves. It gives me an opportunity to meet them, to talk to them. Sometimes I'll get it signed by them, and then I have a souvenir of the show. But in terms of, we live in different states. We're not going to play out. You know, Troy lives in Minnesota. Jay lives in Los Angeles. I live near San Francisco. We're not a band. We're you know, we're musicians who get along, collaborate online. So for the market for CDs these days, when computers don't even come with CD drives and cars don't have CD players, I go back and forth upon, you know, about the worth of the expense. I know that, okay, so if we sell X number of CDs, we'll recoup the expenditure in a short amount of time. But I'm not really sure how many people are really buying physical CDs anymore. I feel almost like people are buying vinyl more than they're buying CDs. People are loving the record players, and they're loving, and I love that people love to sit and listen to music that way. I wish I had a place to put a record player in my house.
Except it's about 8 times more expensive for a short order on vinyl, you know?
Troy just released his double album on vinyl, which is a pretty amazing thing. I know he just funded that himself and doesn't really expect to ever recoup the cost, but what a cool thing to just, you know, put out your album. And that's that one's called Dig Me Under. It's a really amazing kind of Pink Floyd mixed with grunge. It's just a really, I did a little voice acting on that.
Oh, did you?
It's a story album. But yeah, he's all into vinyl, and he put that on a vinyl very recently. He's got it in a record store, even locally to his house. So I applaud that. I don't know that we're going to put our collaborative album out on vinyl. I see people doing cassettes now, which is funny to me. I didn't know people still had cassette players.
Yeah, me too. The only thing I ever think of whenever I see someone talking about the cassettes and cassettes coming back is leaving them in the car in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
And losing
having
their music.
Warp. They get all warped.
Yeah.
And then they don't play right. Wah, wah,
wah. Yep. I don't think I had any cassettes that have survived the decades, but I still have all my vinyl, and it all still plays, you know? So
Now, vinyl can warp too, but I think it can, takes but a different. Yeah. You got to put it in like a storage facility and, you know, high heat or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So what's next? Do you have anything on the horizon here for projects?
In terms of collaborations?
Yeah.
Just the one right now that's going to be out next year. I did the vocals and we're waiting on one more collaborator to do, I want to say, synthesizer parts. We were just talking about it on Twitter DM today. I do have an EP that I'm working on that I want to get some collaboration on, but I don't have enough of a vision of its completeness to know who I want to help and how yet, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I wonder if there were anything from your experiences to date in the catalog that you've built collaborating with others, a takeaway that you would share to our listeners.
Communication, just like it's like any relationship, communication is so important. Make sure that you're all on the same page in terms of what your expectations are. Just be open and honest and say, hey, you know, I think I could have done better with that. Or, hey, you know, is this just being wishy-washy? It's not a place to be wishy-washy. It's a place because you're not in person, because you can't hang out and you don't have, you know, all that nonverbal communication. It's so much more important to have everything explicit. I haven't had any problems myself or any issues, but I've heard some stories about people that have had issues. So just make sure you are all on the same page with your expectations. You know what success looks like, and just don't forget to have fun. It's yeah. You know, playing is playing for a reason. It's, you know, it's play, it's fun. Just remember that that's what it's really supposed to be about, and everybody succeeds.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great chat tonight. I appreciate you sharing that insight of your experience. I think a lot of people find some value in kind of understanding the bits about the process. Certainly we didn't cover it in detail here tonight, but bits about the process and some ideas on how you got through some of the mechanics of producing some music with other people. So anyway, yeah. from a perspective,
some of the details don't matter, like how you share files. Do you use Dropbox? Do you use Google Drive?
Yeah.
That stuff, that's just left to whatever's convenient for the group.
Yeah. Just that you do whatever.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Doug. I really appreciate, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
I didn't expect this one to turn into an interview, but, hey, it's fun to talk about.
Yeah. And I liked this one because I knew that this was an area that you had been developing a lot of experience over the past few years. And today with independent musicians who are trying to maybe get involved with others to play together. And, you know, it's not everybody is a multi-instrumental.
True.
Instrumentalist. And so trying to program drums and, you know, or play guitar or whatever it is when you're a bass player and you don't have all of those other instruments at a skill level that you'd like them to be for the music that you have in your head.
Right.
Finding other people to help you do that, especially if it's people that you enjoy working with or know and have fun with, then, you know, that makes that process all the better.
I agree. And if you are looking for people like that, you know, come join the DIY music chat or the audio mix chat. That's a whole group of friendly and collaborative independent musicians who, you know, might be able to collaborate just for the asking.
Sure. I think there's a lot of people that would like to in that whole group who are probably looking for opportunities to write and to be creative with others.
So. True.
All right. Well, great chat tonight. Thank you very much, Matt.
Well, thanks, Doug.
Yeah.
And
talk to you next
we'll
week.
See you on
I'll
the
talk
next
to you
one.
Before then, but
yes.
Yeah, the next one.
All right. Have a great week.
Yeah, you do the same.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.